Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing again. Believe in a power.
Right. When you don't know what to do, just keep on breathing. From beautiful Huntington Beach, California, on the HealthyLife.net radio network, heard in all 50 states and 135 countries, all positive talk radio. And I'm Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, at caregiverdave.com, along with usually my lovely co-host, Adrienne Gruberg, from the caregiver space, but she's moving. And we all know the stresses that happen when you move. She just can't put another thing on her plate, so we're going to miss her. But we are coming to you live on many, many networks and many platforms. And we are proud to be voted number one caregiver podcast on the top 50 on Player FM, as well as number two podcast on FeedSpot out of the top 60, and number two podcast on CaringVillage.com. And we have an especially exciting show planned for you today. Brooks Kenny, newly launched Brain Guide, addresses immense need for brain health information, insights about cognitive impairment and Alzheimer's disease. And believe me, I'm one of those that is concerned because my mother had dementia and none of us want to go there, do we? That's why I have my long-term care policy in place and I'm doing a bunch of stuff to exercise this brain of mine. Millions of Americans who worry about memory or brain health now have a powerful platform to help them find their way to helpful resources and a path forward, Brain Guide by Us Against Alzheimer's. We're so lucky and happy to have her on the show. But before I get into that, I want to thank last week's guest, Lisa Evers. What is energy healing and can it really help caregivers and loved ones? And just a reminder, all of our previous shows are on the HealthyLife.net archives and also on our website Caregiver Dave and 25 or 26 other global audio and video platforms. All right, enough of that. Brooks Kenny serves as an executive director of the Women's Network at Us Against Alzheimer's. So welcome to the Caregiver Dave show. We're so excited to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me, Dave. Happy to be here.
We like to ask our guests just who is Brooks Kenny and why was she placed on this earth?
Wow. Okay. I wasn't prepared for that one. I am a mother to two beautiful children, a wife to a wonderful man who I've known since I was 16. Wow. I have really dedicated my professional and volunteer work to advancing social causes. So I've always been interested in good work and trying to put my talents toward making change. I've tried to instill that in my kids, in my community, where they go to school. And so my work here at Us Against Alzheimer's really is an extension, I think, of who I am, and really feel excited to share more with you today.
Yeah. First, let me ask you, what is the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? There's a lot of confusion about that. Maybe you can clear it up for me and others.
Yeah, there sure is. It's a common question. So think of dementia as kind of the broader category, and then Alzheimer's is a type of dementia, and it's the most common form of dementia. So there's Lewy body dementia, there's vascular dementia, other types. It's kind of, if you think about cancer, the most common form of cancer might be, I actually don't know because I'm in the Alzheimer's business, but it's Alzheimer's is the most common form of dementia. And oftentimes we don't say the A word, right? So, you know, even in my own personal experience, when my mother-in-law was diagnosed, they never said the word Alzheimer's. They actually handed us a piece of paper with that word written on it, but they said out loud, she has a little dementia. So there's
that's what they always say. Why is that? Why don't they like to say, why don't they like to say the A word, legal liability or what?
No, I really think it's more because it is a top 10 leading cause of death in our country. It impacts 6 million people, one in three American families. There's no treatment. There's no cure. And so providers, they want to have answers for people. They want to be able to talk about what's next. And unfortunately, while there are treatments on the horizon right now, it feels very hopeless. And so, or I shouldn't say right now it feels hopeless, but for so long it has been a disease that providers don't even love to talk about because there's not a lot that can be done. Or at
Let
least
me
that's what we thought. But the science is
let
catching up. New treatments are on the horizon. There's a lot of research being done right now around risk reduction and how early or in the phase of potential decline, we can really impact our brain health.
me question that statistic there for a moment. What is the average age of an Alzheimer's patient who dies? Do you know that? Is it in their 90s?
I don't know that number off the top of my head, but it's certainly, I mean, Alzheimer's certainly age is the largest risk factor for the disease, although we are increasingly seeing cases of early onset, which means you're diagnosed before 65, but most people 70 plus are at the higher risk of getting the disease.
Yeah, because everyone who I know who gets the disease, it seems like they're living forever, and it's so hard on caregivers. It's like, oh my gosh, don't get that one because, your body is typically healthy and your mind is gone. And many times I see that they last into their 90s. And so when you say it's the top 10 causes of death in America, it's like, well, most people die when they're 90 anyway, so is it fair to blame Alzheimer's on that? I don't know. That's just the way my brain thinks.
Yeah, well,
Anyway, but
I think it's interesting. And Dave, I don't think you're alone. I mean, most people, when they picture someone living with Alzheimer's disease, they picture a woman in a wheelchair sitting in a dark room, with the shades drawn. And the reality is that isn't the case. I mean, one of our spokespeople, Doreen Monks, is a 65-year-old woman who has been diagnosed with early onset. She's 6 years into her diagnosis. She's thriving. She is really doing well, and it's because she's got diagnosed early and is doing a lot of those things to take care of herself and to ensure her quality of life is intact, and she has a family and community supporting her. So we really need to shift our perspective on what an Alzheimer's patient looks like because it isn't only those very old and frail.
Yeah, and I'm familiar with that because an actual friend of mine from church, he shared with us recently that his doctor diagnosed him with early onset dementia, and he's not even 50 yet. And I says, "Well, what happened?" He says, "Well, I was driving home from work, and I couldn't remember how to get home." And so, we were concerned, so he got tested, and that's what he found out. And that's a scary, scary thing to be that young. I used to be 48, 49, and I had a pretty full life at that time. The kids were still young enough, and there's nothing more scary than losing your youth to anything, but especially to that.
Yeah, and losing your memories, right? I mean, it is a very scary thing. And so it's why it oftentimes does not get diagnosed. I mean, 60% of Alzheimer's cases go unrecognized. So, let that sink in for a minute. If this was cancer, I mean, I'm glad, not glad that your friend was diagnosed, but glad that he was diagnosed, it sounds like in an earlier phase. And, when we think about a disease like cancer, and I'm not saying cancer is easy, but most of us know stage one, two, three, four, right? And if you got diagnosed stage three or four, that's not great. And yet in Alzheimer's disease, we're not diagnosing early at all. And when there is diagnosis, it's usually during some type of chaotic life event that really impacts the family. So talk about the impact on the family caregiver. The earlier someone can get diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease or another form of dementia, the sooner they can get their life organized around that. What does that look like for safety? What can I expect in what are the next steps in my journey? What local resources are available to me? How can I start thinking about respite for the caregiver now, right? Because the reality is, caregiving for someone living with Alzheimer's disease is a very different activity. There are things you have to learn as a caregiver that you might not have to learn if you were caring for someone with a different condition.
Yeah. I was talking to you before the show about this study for early dementia. Was it, how do they call it? Early onset dementia, how you can predict it before it happens. I'm getting tested. Am I doing everything that I should do? Because I'm concerned about my memory. I'm forgetting things all the time at 67. Is that normal? And I'm getting tested, and they say that there's no cause to worry yet. I got a brain scan, a CAT scan of my brain to have a baseline just in case something happens. They got something to compare it to. Am I doing everything right?
Well, that's fantastic that you have access to those services, which so many people don't, right? And so I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one on TV or radio. But what I will say is that we know that there are risk reduction activities that you can do. So lifestyle, right?
Yeah,
Exercise. There
let's
are
talk
new
about
st
all that, yeah.
Yeah, there are new studies that talk about rigorous exercise 6 days a week being really important for your brain health. Sleep. I mean, sleep. Oh, gosh, don't
Let's
we all
take
need
these,
sleep?
let's back up. Let's take these one at a time. So the
Sure.
rigorous exercise, define what is rigorous exercise, because that's a definition that many different people have different meanings
Yeah,
to.
I mean, I think the way it's described in the research article is, building up a sweat, where
Okay.
you're not able to talk comfortably for 30 minutes at a time. So not a stroll, although strolling is probably good for stress and re reducing risk, but yeah, rigorous exercise like
So for
jogging,
me on
like
the exercise
yeah.
bike, that would be 40 minutes of just going at a steady pace, sweating,
Yeah.
feeling my heart pumping 100 beats per minute, etc.
Exactly. The blood moving, it's good for the brain. Absolutely.
Okay, then you're going to talk about diet. What should we do about with our diet?
Diet, well, there are lots of different theories out there, but the one that seems to be at the top of the list is the MIND diet, which is basically a
Never heard of
Mediterranean
that one.
diet with foods like salmon, leafy greens, nuts, not as much processed foods. It's really eliminating as much processed foods as we can. To ensure, berries are fantastic. There's lots of great resources out there on the MIND diet. I always tell my kids when I give them pink chicken, which basically, Dave, is salmon in our house, I say that's really good for your brain. So trying to
Sushi, is
remind
sushi
them
salmon
that
good too? Raw?
salmon, I don't know if, I'm not sure the difference between raw and regular as it relates to brain. I would think it would be the same, but
Right, get back to me on
I
that.
will.
Sleep.
Sleep is really critical. Your brain, it's kind of, I think, how did a doctor explain it to me? It's like, when you go through those car washes, when you get to sit in the car and watch
Yeah.
the wipers go around on the
Yeah, I love
car,
that.
sleep helps to kind of clean out the plaque and clean out the brain. And consistent sleep. And, many of the sleep studies say going to bed at the same time and waking up at the same time and consistently getting 7 to 8 hours is really good for your brain. And
So
I will
far, I'm
say
doing
this is
pretty
one that
good.
not a lot of people know about. Not a lot of people, it's not a regular thing that people say, wake up, wow, I got a great night's sleep. That was so good for my brain. But we need people to know that, right? Because it'll help.
Yeah, so I'm an unusual caregiver. You see, I'm about 10% of them because 90% of them are not doing well. 30% are dying before their loved ones do, and I don't know, roughly 60 or yeah, about 60% are getting sick, getting hospitalized, and needing a caregiver of their own. So some family members sticking their loved one in a nursing home or something, so they're not getting the good care. About 10% of caregivers really know how to put their oxygen mask on first, how to take care of themselves, how to sleep right. The average caregiver gets 2 hours rest, sleep every single night. I can't survive on that, Many of them don't realize that their loved one belongs in a nursing facility because maybe they have bed sores, maybe they're getting up every 2 hours. You can't get up every 2 hours to do a caregiving duty. That's what 24/7 care is for. So yeah, I totally agree. So far, I'm doing pretty good on my score here.
Right. Yeah, that and well, I just want to acknowledge thank you for the work that you do because I have a feeling that those 10% of caregivers that are doing well, I'm sure they're
Trying to grow
listening
them.
to a lot of the work that you put out there. I so believe in what you say around putting your own oxygen mask on first. And, caregivers are so susceptible to other diseases. And, it's hard enough to manage the isolation, but then if it's compounded by chronic disease, it's that much more stressful, right? For who's going to care for their loved ones. So I fully embrace that mantra. What else? Let me see here. So reducing risks and controlling risks, right? So things like smoking, alcohol use,
Oh, let's
hypertension.
stop there. Let's stop there. Talk about alcohol use. What's the difference between hard alcohol, scotch, bourbon, wine, beer? How much is good? How much is not good? Because some people are saying the red wine is good for the heart, right? Is it bad for Alzheimer's?
Yeah, you're quizzing me, and I don't
Yeah.
know that I can really say with authority what type of alcohol. I don't want to get in
Get
trouble.
back to me
I'm
on
not
that
going to
one,
tell you
too.
what's in my liquor cabinet, but I definitely have been known to have a glass of wine now and again. So I would really consult your doctor on
Moderation would be a safe estimate, all things wine.
moderation is the answer for sure.
Okay, because I know a friend whose mother is an alcoholic, and that's actually bringing on a form of dementia, right?
Yeah, no, it
Alcoholism can
definitely
cause dementia.
excessive use certainly can increase the risk
Yeah,
substantially
she
for
certainly has
sure.
excessive use. She's always drinking. So, we've got a minute before our break. Let's take an early break. Then I want to ask you about Brain Guide and what is that? Because that's an interesting concept. You've trademarked it, so it must be important. So we'll be right back. Don't go away. And we're back with Brooks Kenny, and we're talking about her Brain Guide. What is that? Where'd you come up with the name? And what does it all mean? And is it working? Is it something that we can say finally, something's here that will tell me before I get it that I'm high risk, etc.
Yeah, so Brain Guide by Us Against Alzheimer's, it's a really simple, easy to use platform, and we really created it for everyone. We know that people are worried about their brain health. We know they're worried about their loved one's brain health, and we know they don't often know the next steps that they may need to take in their journey. So what Brain Guide offers is confidential memory questionnaires that can be taken via a web bot or via a voice bot. So you can call an 800 number. You go through a series of questions. You can take it for yourself, or you can take it as a caregiver on behalf of a loved one. And these memory questionnaires are based on validated assessments that are used in a clinical setting today. So they're not validated yet for the voice and the web bot, but they're the exact same things that would be taken in a clinical setting. Once you complete the questionnaire, we curate using state-of-the-art technology by Amazon Web Services. We curate content. Think of it as kind of there's a huge library of resources out there, and people can't afford the time to go on Google and try to figure out how to navigate. So we do that work for you. We basically curate the content based on your responses. So whether you take the questionnaire for yourself and you score well, we're going to give you a set of resources and information related to brain health and all those tips like eating well and exercising and sleep. Perhaps you take it for your loved one. Maybe it's for mom or dad who you've been noticing changes in their memory and the score isn't as high. You're going to get a set of curated content that shows here's how to talk to your loved ones about screening and diagnosis. Here's information you can bring to your doctor. Here's what to expect if you actually go to a doctor to get a workup, and
Wow.
here are some of the things that they would do as part of that process. Because most people, if you ask, how do you detect Alzheimer's disease? Most people on the street will not know the answer. And so we want to educate people far and wide. This platform is designed for anyone that is worried about their brain health. We want young people to be even taking it so that they start thinking about their brain as a vital organ.
Yeah.
Our brains are central to every single thing we do, yet it's the least talked about organ in our family, around the kitchen table, and certainly in our healthcare conversations. And so Brain Guide, I should also note, Dave, it's fully available in English and Spanish. So it's completely
Oh,
translated. It will always be free. It'll always be accessible by visiting mybrainguide.org or by calling 855-BRAINGUIDE. Brain 411, and you can go through an actual voice bot. I don't know. Have you tried it yet? Have you tried the voice bot? Are you going to give it a
No,
try
but
after
I'm
we talk?
going to. I just came up with four questions just in the last minute that you were talking. I've got to clear them out here. Otherwise, I'll forget them. So the questionnaire, is it, how does it compare with the tests that they give me every 6 months, which are kind of long? It takes 30 minutes to go through them. Is it a long questionnaire or a short one? Would
No.
I be able to answer the questions on behalf of somebody else? Are they that simple? You know, because a lot of them
Yep.
are deep.
Yeah, no, it's great. So this is an assessment. This is not a screening like you would maybe get in the doctor's office. And we even say that, this is not intended to be the full workup that a provider would do. So if you take it for yourself, it's based on the MIS, which is the memory impairment screen. This is copywritten by Albert Einstein Medical School. We have license to use it in this format. We ask you a series of questions up front, and then we give you four words to memorize. And then we go through a series of distraction tasks, and then we ask you those four words again. So it usually takes under 10 minutes to go through the questionnaire. If you're
It's an
calling on
abbreviated
behalf,
version,
correct.
if
It
that
gives,
makes some sense.
but it, I mean, we actually evaluated about 200 of these types of screens that exist out there in the clinical setting, and this one was more sensitive to early Alzheimer's disease. It was more sensitive and appropriate for different education and cultural considerations. So we wanted to pick one that our medical experts agreed made the most sense. And then
So I
for
would call it
caregivers,
I would call it a short quiz rather than the test or the screening.
Right. We call it a memory questionnaire.
Red
Yep.
flags.
Yep. Exactly. This is not a diagnosis, but it is going to give you enough information to take to your doctor. And for the AD8, which is the assessment for the caregiver or the informant questionnaire, is out of Washington University under license. And this is largely used by clinicians in the exact format that you'll see on the site. And we tell you this when you're calling about or taking it on the website, it should be about somebody that you see often. You can't necessarily use it for someone that you talk to on the phone once a week. It's got to be someone that you see more regularly so that you can reflect back on the questions.
All right. Next question I have is you talked about young people, and so I immediately thought of some young people I know who are potheads or smoking a lot of pot. I was a pothead when I was a teenager. Fortunately, I gave it up 45 years ago, but
Right.
they still don't know how long-term pot usage affects brain and memory, dementia, Alzheimer's. Is that true, or have they figured it out?
Yeah, no, that's true. And it's also, I think, true that there are different types of marijuana and pot now, right? There's like
Yeah, it's a
synthetically
lot stronger,
made,
I'm
and
told.
yeah. I think it's a lot more dangerous now, and I think they know it does impact the brain negatively. I don't know that they have a full understanding of the extent, but it's dangerous for sure.
Sad, sad, sad. And then the other question, I'm sorry, all these questions. The D word, how come you keep using the A word instead of the D word? I'm just curious because you mentioned that nobody likes this, but you're using it, you know?
Yeah,
So,
well, I'm
A.
using it in this discussion for a couple reasons. One, the two questionnaires are Alzheimer's specific. So they're specifically created for looking at Alzheimer's as the most common form of dementia. We also talk a lot about brain health when we talk about this movement, this work, because we did a study across the country, and not surprisingly, people were much more interested, excuse me, in us talking about brain health than Alzheimer's disease. Which is a big reason why we named the platform Brain Guide, because we want people to start thinking about their brains. We want their brains to be top of mind. We want them to feel like they know what the next step is on their journey, hence the name Brain Guide. And we actually tested it widely across a lot of folks, lots of different ages, ethnicities, incomes, to see how it would resonate and how it would resonate with Spanish-speaking audiences as well.
Now, my mom, I mean, it sounded like to me she had the same symptoms as Alzheimer's, but they never officially tested her. Even my mother-in-law, they never officially tested her. He said, well, why should we test her? I mean, if she obviously has a dementia, then no need to actually determine is it Alzheimer's or is this. And so is it possible my mom and my mother-in-law could have had Alzheimer's but was untested?
Absolutely. I
Okay.
mean, I don't, I, again, I'm not a doctor and I don't know what
Sure.
their symptoms were, but 60% of the cases go unrecognized or ignored, or people just say, oh, it's just a normal part of aging, but it really isn't.
Okay.
Not everyone that's old has Alzheimer's disease.
And my last spontaneous question, because you said these are free, we don't make any money. So my question is, being an entrepreneur, well, how do you make money then if it's all free?
Sure. Well, we received funding and in-kind support
Okay.
from Biogen. We are currently seeking additional funding to continue the progress we've made. And AWS, Amazon Web Services, provided the technology to build the first version of the platform. As a
Right.
nonprofit organization, there are lots of ways we bring revenue into our organization to support our mission. So, you know, we have corporate, foundation, government, and individual donors.
All right. We're going to take another break. We'll be right back. Don't go away. When we come back, I want to ask you about, I forgot what I was going to ask you. See how that brain works. Well, we'll figure it out. Be
Okay.
right back. And we're back with Brooks Kenny. And what was I going to ask you? Oh, I know what. I interrupted you when you were going down this long list. And if you can find your way back to where I interrupted you, please continue.
Well, yeah, I mean, just wanting to share a little bit more about how BrainGuide was created. We had a medical expert panel of providers from a wide range of specialties. You know, I don't know if your audience knows this, but there are states in our country where we don't even have enough neurologists to serve the
Really?
communities.
I
So
didn't know that.
we really need to get primary care docs. We need OBGYNs, the providers that most women see. If they see one every year, that's usually the one, depending on your age. And so we brought a lot of different physicians together to help us create BrainGuide, to look at our language that we were using, to look at how we presented the results if somebody got a low score on their memory questionnaire. We also did market research. So throughout the process, we did qualitative and quantitative research, testing everything from the voice bot, which I know you're going to call, Dave, 855
Of course, I'm going
Brain411.
to call.
I
Yes.
snuck it in.
I have a personal, do the number again.
855 Brain411 or 855-272-4641. And when
Right.
you call, you'll hear a voice. Well, we tested that voice. I had no idea with this amazing Lex technology from Amazon Web Services. You know, they're different voices that have different sounds and pacing, and we tested those. So a lot of market research went into creating this
Which
to
voice
allow for
did
people to
you agree
feel
on?
like it was safe and confidential.
Okay, well, this is great. And yes, I am definitely going to use it because, I'm concerned and I want to get as many tests as possible and see, get it's like a second opinion, right?
Yeah, and you know, I'm so impressed by what you're doing on a regular basis to care for your brain. I don't think you're in the majority though, right? I
No,
mean,
I'm
most
not.
people tell us,
I'm
how
weird.
do you talk about it? How do you raise the topic? So, if nothing else, I really hope people will give BrainGuide a try and then print out the results and bring them to your doctor, bring them to a loved one, and spark that conversation, right? Just have the conversation so that you can
Yeah.
go to the next step in your journey. I feel so passionately that we have to make a dent in early detection and diagnosis so families don't have to suffer in silence and shame. I really think there's hope on the horizon if early detection can become the norm in this disease.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you, where are we in early detection? Because a lot of people are just afraid, the ostrich, the head in the sand. I have an aunt whose doctor recommended she have some tests and, hinted around that it could be cancerous. And people think if they just stop or postpone or ignore cancer, that it's somehow it's going to go away. And they can't do that with this either. So how close are we?
Sadly, I don't think we're very close. I think it's shifting. I think there's a much stronger narrative now in our country around brain health. I think the science is catching up. So there are more studies that reinforce risk reduction through lifestyle and controlling risk. But at the end of the day, 60% of the cases are still going unrecognized. Consumers tell us they don't know how to raise the topic. Providers that we have interviewed tell us they don't feel confident talking about memory unless you're a neurologist. Neurologists are fine, but the doctors that we see more often than
Yeah, the family
neurologists,
practitioners, yeah.
they're not comfortable talking about memory. A, they don't have enough time, and B, they're oftentimes not trained. So one of the big things we're doing is putting together risk reduction guidelines for providers so that we can try to help them feel more empowered to raise these topics as well with their patients. So I think we have a long way to go, but the roadmap to getting there is feeling much more clear than it ever has before.
Wow. And everyone knows, I think, that because I read it somewhere, that stress is a huge factor in either having it or not having it, either having too much stress or no stress. Is that true?
Yeah, and we know that. I mean, we have a neurologist that we work with who often says the number one thing she talks to her patients about is reducing stress. It is a leading cause of so many health issues, Alzheimer's being among them. So, yes, it's good for your brain to learn new things because that gets your synapses firing, but that's different than being in a constant state of stress. So anything we can do, and I tell people, again, I'm not a doctor, but you don't have to adopt a full-on 24/7 or 7 day a week meditation practice, but maybe get up from your desk 3 times a day and take a deep breath. You say it so well, just keep breathing. If there are ways that we can kind of reduce our stress, I think it will have an impact on our quality of life for sure.
That's our motto here. Just keep on breathing.
I love it. I love it.
So what is the youngest person you've ever heard of come up with early onset dementia? I mentioned my 48-year-old friend.
There was a story recently, not that recently, about a woman in her thir early 30s who developed Alzheimer's
Wow.
disease. Yeah.
And
So, I mean,
is
it can
that
happen. I mean,
unusual?
obviously it's
Is that
rare, but
unusual, rare?
it can happen.
And they don't know why it happens to a 30-year-old, and they don't know why it happens to a 65-year-old, right?
Right. I mean, I do think the presence of the APOE4 gene increases the likelihood that it would be earlier, but I think there's still a lot we don't know.
Wow. And I don't even know if my mother's was genetic, right? Because her mother and her, well, her father only lived to 65, so that's not fair to wonder if he would have gotten it. But her mother was 100, almost 100 years old, 97, and she was sharp as a tack. But
Wow.
I think my mother took more after my father because, she didn't act like her mother. She acted more like her father. So who knows? It could be genetic, which
Wow.
means I could be at risk too. And like I said, at 67, I'm already starting to see memory stuff. But they say, and I'm sure you'll tell me if this is true or not, if you forget things but then you later remember them, you're okay. But if you forget things and it never comes back, it's like a hole on your hard drive, Danger Will Robinson, right?
Yeah, and that's true, and there's a couple other ways you can think about it that I've been fortunate enough to learn from the experts in our community. So, if you forget where you put your keys, right? How many times does that happen?
A lot.
It's probably not a big deal. It's probably more that you were distracted when you put
Yes.
your keys down.
Distraction
Because
is
we
big.
are
Yes.
all victims of multitasking, right? So if you're not paying attention to where you put your keys and you can't find them, it's probably okay. If you don't remember what the keys are used for,
Ooh.
that's where there might be a problem. If you can't remember where you parked your car, probably not a huge deal. But if you don't remember why you were even in the place that your car is parked, if you don't remember what the car is supposed to do, probably something that you need to get checked. So
That's
there's
good.
nuances. I mean, it's normal for our memory to shift a little as we get older, but we have to be focused on things like paying attention, not multitasking, And then really, if you forget what something is used for or why you're even there in the first place, that's a little bit more of a concern.
Now, I know people, I know movies, I know actors' names, and many times I cannot tell you the name of the actor who starred in Gone with the Wind. I know it's Clark Gable, but there have been times that name was just not there, and later on it would come back, but I don't have to worry about that,
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's
right?
really more the day to day. If something really drops, like you said, and something that's not normal for you. Like I, for example, like I'm terrible at trivia, but I've been terrible at trivia since I started playing with my husband's family when I was 16. I'm never going to be good at trivia. But if I was good at trivia my whole life and then all of a sudden I'm not, that's something we need to pay attention to, right? So thinking about what you do normally, and if your day-to-day normal starts to look different, that's something to pay attention to.
So my canary in the coal mine is my piano. I don't know a lot of songs. I know three songs on my piano, and if I don't practice them at least once a month, it's like, oh no. If I start forgetting how to play a song, then I think that's a Danger Will Robinson moment also. Would you agree?
I mean, again, you'd have to ask your doctor, but yeah, I mean, if you play three songs every month and you know how to play them, and then all of a sudden it's not there for you, that's something you probably want to pay attention to. I
We're
think
going to
you
take
should
another
add a
break.
new song once a month. That's good for your brain.
So hard too. We're going to take a break. Hold on, don't go away. And we're back with Brooks Kenny. We're talking about brain health, Alzheimer's, dementia, things we should do, things we should not do, and just gave me advice of a new song. I've been telling myself to learn a new song, that I am sick of these three songs, but it takes time. I mean, I'm not a natural piano player. It takes me like it took me a whole year to learn Malaganya, to give you an idea. So it doesn't
Wow.
come easy for me. So to
Right.
start a new song, unless it's a really short song, but I will. I'll take your advice and I'll do it.
Okay, good.
The
I'm glad to
interest of
hear
brain.
it.
Where does Alzheimer's fall in the spectrum of the most costly and deadly diseases, right? We know cancer's way up there. We know the Alzheimer's Association has been collecting tons of money, and they're very good in their fundraising, much better than any organization for caregivers. And we know caregivers are in real bad shape, and there's not as much recognition as there is in dementia, and the Alzheimer's Association do a great job. But what are they doing with all this money? And are we any closer? I could say the same thing about cancer. What are they doing with all this money? But you can see some progress with cancer, early detection, et cetera. Chances are you're going to live. But what is the Alzheimer's Association? Are they having any victories?
So they do great work. We collaborate with them a lot. We sit on the World Dementia Council with them. We sit on the NAPA Advisory Council, which is focused on a national goal around Alzheimer's. I don't know specifically what they're doing in terms of research funding. I will say, I think as an advocacy organization, there are, many patient advocacy groups, including the Association and Us Against Alzheimer's and many others, we all advocate for more research dollars in this space. We believe strongly that we need to put Alzheimer's at the top of the list. We were thrilled that President Biden talked about Alzheimer's in his recent speech. We want brain health and Alzheimer's and research. We want this disease to get the national attention, the global attention that it deserves, because we don't want millions of families left behind. One of our person living with the disease, Doreen, who helped guide us on the development of BrainGuide, she has a great quote that was featured on Good Morning America, where she said, "There's 6 million of us. You can't just put us in a corner. You need to bring us out and start telling our stories." And if you think about most patient advocacy groups, people living with the disease, people living with breast cancer, and their care partners are oftentimes, at the front of the story. But how many times do we see someone living with Alzheimer's disease out front and center? If you really think about it, we don't, right? I mean, we might hear about them if they're a celebrity. You know, we all heard about Pat Summitt, Tony Bennett. I mean, they're people that, you know, they're so brave for coming forward.
Yeah, or
We
great
aren't.
movies like the Notebook, for example.
Exactly. And The Father that just won an Academy, you know, Anthony Hopkins that just won an Academy Award, and Still Alice. I mean, there's some amazing books and entertainment, which I think will also help shift this conversation and allow us to start talking about it more. That's a wonderful, you know, benefit of entertainment. And I really applaud the entertainment industry for doing more of that. The reality is, we're not telling the everyday stories. And so the more
Yeah.
we can reduce stigma and get these stories told, I think the better we all are.
That's because the actors and the producers and the directors all have parents who are going through this, and so it's hot on their
Yep.
minds, so to speak. Well, we're in the home stretch here. We only have minutes to go. What would you like to say that I haven't already asked you that you would like to say?
Well, I'd like your audience to know that when we created Brain Guide, from the very beginning, we had a focus on health equity. Health equity has been a pillar of our work at Us Against Alzheimer's since we were founded in 2010. And we wanted to ensure that this would be available to all communities. I mean, it is stunning to me that by 2030, 40% of cases of Alzheimer's disease will be with Latino or Black Americans. And that's a stunning statistic that's pretty unacceptable from our point of view. And so we wanted to make this service accessible. It'll always be free. It will always have stakeholders from a wide range of communities to keep us focused on, you know, cultural sensitivity and relevance. And so I hope that it's used by millions of people. Already, just out of the gate, we're about 3 weeks in, we've already reached 70,000 people who have visited Brain Guide and started to participate in the memory questionnaire. So it's only a dent, but we have big, big dreams for this platform.
Good for you. Appreciate you coming on the show. How can someone contact you or learn more about Brain Guide other than the 855 Brain 411 phone number to actually take part in it?
So yeah, you can visit mybrainguide.org and take the memory questionnaire. There's also a contact email there. You're welcome to reach out to Brooks Kenny at Us Against Alzheimer's. And of course, you can dial the 800 number as well. And would love to have folks give it a try.
The 855 number.
I want you to try the 855, Dave.
All right.
And certainly visit the website and check out the
Absolutely
resources
will.
and take the memory questionnaire.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you coming on the show. You were a wealth of information. I learned a lot. And as you know, I am an interested party. I have got a stake to protect, so to speak, because I don't want to end up like my mother. And again, thank you. And for everyone else, thank you for tuning in on the show. We will see you next time. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing.